up on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day, it will brighten all our way, if we keep on the sunny side of life.
Welcome to the latest edition of the Export Finance Podcast. This time the subject is SMEs, and we have with us Simon Sayer, Gabby Buck, Simon Jones, and in no way a reflection of their expertise in the subject of SME, we are also joined again by Rebecca Harding of Quant Analytics, and for the first time, Mark Ling of Santander. Welcome, everybody. So, first question. Do SMEs really know about export finance, and why would they use it? Now, to give context to that first, maybe Rebecca, you can sort of talk about some of your research into this area, sort of on the general sort of economic terms, you know, SMEs access to finance, and then from there we can sort of go into how it's actually applied in terms of export finance and who's using it. So Rebecca, over to you.
I think what's interesting about this area is the fact that in the banking sector and the sort of business support sector, we worry constantly about the SME finance gap. And access to finance is always an issue. It's always something that we see. And you can see that in the data to some extent, because the amounts of the numbers of companies that are accessing SME finance in the UK in particular has remained relatively static. The numbers are still big, but it's remained relatively static for the last couple of quarters. So I think you have to put it in the context of the fact that there's both a supply side and a demand side issue here. So on the supply side, there's actually money there. There's actually liquidity there in banks to be able to support these SMEs as they grow. But to your point, are these companies actually knowing that they're export-led companies and that they want specifically trade finance? I think the answer to that question is possibly not. We did some work a number of years ago on the Asian market, and we surveyed SMEs, and most of them said, actually, we just want working capital. They didn't say that they needed trade finance. And then in the UK as well, I think there's a big issue around whether or not SMEs actually classify themselves as international businesses. But of course, as soon as you've got a website, you're an international business. So people in those companies need to be educated. So there's something on the supply side and there's something on the demand side. Need to bring the two together.
Gabby, I know that you've done sort of some research and looked at some of the stats in this area too. Do you care to share?
Yeah, I think that picking up the point of Rebecca, there's plenty of liquidity in the banking market for overdraft, working capital facility, BGI facilities. But on the question of do SMEs know about export finance as a different class of funding, I think the answer to that is unfortunately no. They haven't got a clue. And I say that with all of the work that I did with the Coal Commission, and we were looking at the whole market of supporting exporters and how do SMEs tap export finance. And we were shocked as to how little knowledge most SMEs had about the availability of export finance and how export finance and support for exporters generally, particularly as you got outside of the M25, it fell off a cliff. And also, if you looked at the data in terms of the penetration the UKTI, now DIT, were trying to do in terms of seeing all of the SMEs, it would take them 20 years to hit each SME once to talk about what support there is from UK government and support from the market as a whole. So I think there's plenty of liquidity from banks in terms of working capital overdraft facilities. But in terms of export finance, I think most SMEs are completely in the dark as to what's available to them.
It depends whether you're talking about the UK or whether you're talking about the global position as well, I think. And the UK position has been driven by the massive structural change you've had in the banking market. It costs a lot of money to grow your international business. A lot of the UK banks have retracted their international business. You know, the traditional clearers of NatWest, Barclays and Lloyds don't really have what they used to have in terms of international business. Santander is, I guess, picking up a little bit of that at the smaller end. HSBC obviously still does have its international business, but the three banks I mentioned used to have international branches around the country, and they don't anymore. Not in the same way they used to. I mean, the international business, when Gabby and I started at Barclays Export Finance, there was a short-term trade business alongside our export credit agency business, which was as big as the ECA business, just looking at short-term export finance type products. And also there's the definition around what is export finance.
Yeah, I think that's key.
What is export finance?
It's what do you mean by export finance? And it means a lot of different things to a lot of different people.
And from a banking perspective, outside of the medium-term ECA financing, even if you ask a banker, they'd struggle, a lot of bankers would struggle to define what it means, yeah? So I think the answer to your core question is there is a lack of knowledge. So we've done quite a bit of our own research and two key pillars. One is lack of knowledge and the other one is fear. So there's this, fundamentally, you've got small SMEs, never had the experience. There's a generation that probably has lost this trading expertise, and frankly it's been easy to do business or easier to do business. There's been a lot of liquidity, you know, this is pre-financial crisis, so it's not necessarily been a focus, and government support, you know, basically fell away effectively and they privatized it, and you've now got a situation. I think there's a generation that's lost that capability and experience, and that's something that we have to start looking at again, and how do you know that the lack of knowledge piece then moves on to this fear piece. Well, how do you address that? Well, it's actually about training, education, you know, trying to take away those issues, so give them confidence, give them experience, and that is not something that just banks can do. That's the whole ecosystem that has to do that.
Yeah, that fear factor is really quite important now in terms of researching for here, and actually the BBA, Mike Conroy, issued quite an interesting report in March this year, part of which quotes the research that came out from BDRC, and they were saying that 7 out of 10 SMEs said that they would accept a slower rate of growth rather than borrow to grow more quickly. and so therefore there's this huge risk aversion at this moment in time, with SMEs actually holding more cash than actually borrowing from the banks, even though the SMEs know that the confidence that they would have if they went to banks asking for support, most, 8 out of 10, would say that they would get the support that they would ask for. But there's a reticence to do that.
And I think that's really important, because the issue around whether or not an SME is actually happy with the status quo is actually, to some extent, what's creating what I've referred to as the demand side problem. I mean, it's that reluctance, and it's not just the smaller SMEs, it's becoming the bigger SMEs as well. So the story of the period since the global financial crisis, if you look at SME borrowing, has been that it's actually been held back. People have held on to cash, they've kept those cash reserves. So if you look at deposits of companies, they're actually in banks, sort of cash deposits are actually growing, which you wouldn't expect in a period where we're expecting, you know, international growth. And that actually is partly because I think the BDRC calls it happy remainers or something like that. They call it, they're happy non-borrowers. They're happy where they are. They are. They're happy with the status quo.
Because remain means something different now, I guess.
Yes, I guess so. But we're moving swiftly on. but the point is, they're happy non-borrowers. They're happy with the status quo, and they're happy with the fact that they actually don't need that huge expansion, and possibly in the situation that we are in at the moment globally, that's holding back a lot of SME growth, because, as I said at the beginning, there is liquidity there, but there's a lack of awareness of the need to access it and what it can do.
I would completely agree with that, and I think, Dan, coming back to your question, you know, do they know about export finance and should they use it? No, I don't think they should. I think that most SMEs are not really oriented towards the export market. In fact, statistically, SMEs in, take the example of the UK, make up about 99% of all businesses in the UK. 99%. There are over 5 million of them. 5.2 million SMEs in the
UK. A nation of shopkeepers.
A nation of shopkeepers. Mm. A nation of sole traders. A nation of people who've set up their own company, maybe for tax reasons or for whatever. However, of those, only about 11% are actually engaged in some sort of international trade. So a very, very small proportion of SMEs are actually looking to the export market. If you look at medium-sized companies, then it's something more like 45 to 50% are engaged in some sort of international trade. Large corporates, as you'd expect, 55 to 60% are engaged in some sort of international trade. So most SMEs just aren't interested in this as a subject matter. Should they use export finance? Well, no, if they're not looking at the international market.
But there is a strong logical link there, Simon, as well, that by definition, when companies are small, they can trade in their own environment. And as they get bigger, they need to trade in international environments. And when they get very big, the only place to trade is internationally because you wouldn't be able to survive as well. So there is a rationale.
And most small companies want to become medium-sized companies. Most medium-sized ones want to become large ones, but at their own pace. And that doesn't necessarily mean engaging in international trade themselves. Because if we had an effective supply chain where they become subcontractors to larger companies, either medium or large ones, which are exporting, then they engage in international trade without actually having to do it themselves. Yeah, and that's the way it should
tier
work.
Tier 2, tier 3 supply
chain, yeah. Basically.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it really depends. I think things have moved on. I think if a company starts, is digitalized, both in terms of its outlook to the market, to its customers, and its supply chain, they see the market as being the digital market. They don't see themselves.
They don't see the borders.
They don't see the borders, right? And I think that, looking around this room, you know, we're old school. We've seen the market as old. I think the market's changed. I think those companies that are have that platform, they don't see that. They just see that they trade, and they don't see that they're restricted in terms of just being operating within, you know, the confines of the UK. So I think it's a mentality and perception, but it is about risk. And I think Mark's point is, and Rebecca's point is very valid. You've got, on the one hand, those companies that are very risk averse, who may not be digitalized and would see going international trade as being a very risky thing to do. You know, which market do you start? And then also, I think there's a culture here in the UK of once you become comfortable and you're a CEO and you're making, you know, 2, 3, 4 million, and you know, on a personal level as a CEO, you're making $500,000. You're the captain of the golf club and you don't need to do this. I think there's a culture here of not really wanting to kind of go to the next level and the level after that. And I think,
but okay, that would be a pretty successful SME, by the way. I mean, I'd be full of admiration for that gentleman. But so if the vast majority of SMEs aren't interested in exports, and you said, what is export finance, Mark? I think, you know, okay, so what do we do if we think about what export finance is, export credit or private market insured, medium or long-term financing for capital equipment and infrastructure? That's typically what we talk about in our market as export finance. It's completely inappropriate for SMEs, completely. And I think if SMEs are looking for growth, they'd be far better off learning about letters of credit, uniform customs and practices, Incoterms, learning about risk, getting paid through other trade means. But export finance is a sledgehammer to crack a nut for most SMEs. It's inappropriate.
So, I mean, we're just taking that point, because obviously that point is against a backdrop where you have ECAs themselves in particular coming out and making announcements about how they want to support SMEs. I mean, you know, Donald Trump came out yesterday saying he's going to put the two sort of board members in place to sort of to revive Exim, and a lot of that was, you know, SMEs. It's all about
SMEs. I think it's just about definition. Mm-hmm. So there's two sides. So let's just take our home ECA UK Export Finance. There are two I mean, they've restructured, and I think they've restructured in a good way, and we're seeing some good things from Louis and the team there.
At UK Export Finance,
but fundamentally, they're two sides to it. There's the buyer credit, the direct lending, the supplier credit, one side. Then you've got six other sets of short-term products, which are appropriate to some SMEs. And I agree with you, Simon, that it's not every SME, because it's complex. You know, it's complex and it's costly. So what I don't think SME should do is we must go and export because we've heard we should export. Because it is complex, and there's no getting away from it. The regulatory environment for banks and therefore those companies is costly, is expensive, is complex. So you don't do it lightly. And therefore, you must have something in your product or your services that fundamentally gives you a competitive advantage internationally that you know you can grow it. And that's not for every company. And I think the danger is that we get too many companies think, all right, actually, we've got to go and export now. Well, it may not necessarily be as a prime contractor. It may be, well, actually go through a mid-market company, go through a large corporate, go through a global multinational. I mean, you know, the amount of companies in the Midlands that are exporting through Jaguar Land Rover, as an example, is huge. So, and that's appropriate.
So then we're talking about supply chain finance, actually. It's something completely different. And I think...
It depends. I go back, Rebecca, to its definition.
Yeah.
Simon's got one definition. I've got one. You've got one.
Yeah.
We've all got a different definition.
Yeah. And completely agree, because you're looking also at... you know, to Gabby's point about the digital world, we're also looking at service-based companies and the extent to which service-based companies are integrated into the manufacturing process, because manufacturing as service is increasingly important as well. So, some of the challenges for SMEs when they're going international is, how do you find new markets? How do you find new clients? How do you make yourself distinctive? And the only way of doing that is actually by going into a supply chain and actually perhaps being the bottom of the food chain for a little while, but actually learning the way of doing things with other partners. And that actually alters the financial equation as well.
Yeah, that's one way. But, my experience has been actually small companies, when they're exporting, they don't start off looking to be an exporter. Often, they start off by having a reverse inquiry from someone outside of the UK that comes to them. They then deal with that. They find a solution. They find that becomes very successful and very profitable for them. And as a result of that first trade, then start looking for others or start building others on the back of that. And I think for that market, I think it's important that the UK... as a whole, finds a way of supporting that growth. If you look at, I can't remember the actual data, but there were some reports issued about a year or so ago, basically saying that those companies who are exporters actually are a much stronger credit risk. Mm. You're not just dependent on one market here.
Exactly. So the data we've got on that, Gabby, is that companies that do export are four times less likely to fail in difficult markets, i.e. in a recessionary environment, 10 times less likely to fail. Now, that sounds really grand, isn't it? But it's just diversification of risk, yeah? Mm. That's all. It's no more complex than that, basically. But it's fact. Yeah. So plenty of research.
Just on the topic of supply chains, that here's another statistic, and this comes from the Centre for Economics and Business Research.
That wasn't just sent to you by your phone, was it?
Just came in. So the UK is among the five worst performing countries in Europe when it comes to getting small and medium-sized companies exporting. But, and that low share puts the UK in the bottom five of EU markets for SMEs exporting, together with Germany, Sweden, Finland, and Poland. They're not countries that are typically deemed to be exporting failures, are they? You know, all hugely strong countries in terms of exports. Now, you could argue that one of the reasons the percentages of exports from SMEs is so small is because the overall exports from those countries is a very large figure. I would argue that they have much better integrated supply chains, that SMEs are exporting through their national champions, all the names we know from those countries, and that's why they're as successful as they are. So I really don't think that it's as essential as we think to have SMEs exporting, providing the supply chains works and you have national champions promoting local sourcing and getting SMEs involved in their business. That's the way it should work.
Okay. Well, look, taking your figures before, I think it was sort of, 11% of SMEs, small SMEs, yep, will export, and 44% of medium-sized, I think it's a 55% of large, or conveniently, yep, divisible by 11. But within that, there is a sliver, presumably, that would be applicable for using ECA finance. And if obviously that's just UK and across the globe, there's also sort of some that could access it in some way. And let's be honest, when exporters of all level talk about particularly using ECAs, it's a complex process. It's difficult. There's a lot of forms. It's hard. Simon Jones, is there anything that is being done, could be done to improve accessibility to companies that are maybe constrained for time and resources, but are applicable to access?
I think the question is, should it be done?
Okay.
Coming back to Simon Sayer's point, I do not believe generically ECA finance is for SMEs. That's just a general answer, because we're working with an SME right now that's a very small SME that's actually undertaking a $650 million project overseas and needs desperate help. And we'll use ECA finance. But that's unusual. I think SMEs and ECA is a complete misnomer. I think it's just used as a political hot potato everywhere. Donald Trump, as you said, used it yesterday. Everyone says, ECAs are just supporting Mr. Big and they're not supporting Mr. Little. And they're only just getting some, gradually, this supply chain effect that if you don't support Boeing, then actually there's 5,000 very small companies in Minnesota who go under because they can't sell aircraft anymore from Boeing.
I disagree completely with you there, Simon. And I normally
that's
do.
That's a shock.
Yeah. Good, thanks for that.
Look, what do the export credit agencies do? They mitigate risk, okay? Yeah. So if you're saying to, if you look at the ECAs to do that, then I disagree with you, because I think SMEs, by definition, cannot take the risk if they're looking to export.
You didn't let me finish, Gabriel Buck. I was going around to say was it's a misnomer that ECAs should have this requirement to support SMEs. That was just an example of it. There are ECAs who are supporting ECAs in their own way, at the smaller end, and they've created sort of subsets. ECAs, for the short term, were privatised. ECGD privatised its short-term arm in 1991 on the 1st of December, approximately. And it did that for a reason, because SMEs can access quite large volumes of support from the commercial markets.
I think that's true historically.
Yeah,
it's no longer true in the market today because of the complexity of regulation and the cost. So therefore, and we've got a different environment in terms of banks. Banks do not trust each other in the way they used to. So it's a bank-to-bank issue as much as it is a bank-to-SME issue.
Defining export finance, regulatory and KYC issues, and even that does come back down to LCs and people don't...
Exactly, and I agree with that. It has got harder, it has got riskier as well, but that doesn't mean ECAs are the right people to resolve it. That doesn't make ECAs the solution.
There are ECAs doing
this.
There
are plenty of other tools out there.
BPI France is a good example. SEK in Sweden supports the smaller exporter with their EKN business. The UK developed its direct lending programme partly to support small transactions, because banks wouldn't do it because it was too costly for banks to do a $5 million transaction.
But you raise a very good point. Ironically, what's happened with the direct lending facility? Yeah. It's been used exclusively by large corporates for large transactions.
I don't think direct lending was ever for SMEs at all.
It was designed exactly for SMEs as part of its mantra. Day one was that.
Yeah.
Simon Say is correct, though. The usage has been something else. Although I think that's more of a manifestation that, going back to Simon Jones's point, that, banks are not, there are banks, shall we say, who don't see export finance being applicable to SMEs. And I think that the issue is, one about how easy is it for an SME to have access to an export credit agency support to help to do business. So, you know, let's paint a scenario. Imagine it took an SME max 2 days to get support for a contract overseas that gave them the ability to go to their bank and say, look, I've got the full political and commercial guarantee associated with this risk mitigated. That then would drive, I think, a lot of SMEs and banks to do that business if the process was simple.
And right? You know what, Gabby? Who should provide that service? It should be whole turnover policies with private risk insurers. It should be banks under LCs if they don't fit under whole turnover policies. It shouldn't be case by case, expensively underwritten, one-offs through ECAs. It's not an efficient process.
Efficient in what way? In terms of the process of getting it, or efficient in terms of what you get at the end? Because I think it's very efficient in terms of what you get out the end, because at the end you get a guarantee, which for a bank is a full mitigation, and it's easy to fund. I know your bank does take the view that a insurance policy does provide that risk transfer, but for a lot of banks, the difference between an insurance policy and a UK export finance guarantee is chalk and cheese. And when you've got that guarantee, that opens up a much wider pool of liquidity for funding.
So I think Gabby, you're right. It is about ease of access and it's about efficiency. So, you know, it's going to be very interesting as we develop over the next 6 months or so as we go to this delegated model for the short-term products of UK export finance, whether that does make a difference. But the whole rationale is to make it easier for the customer, yeah, and to speed the process up. That's key. Now, the proof will be in the pudding. So do we get the model right? You know, does it become more efficient? And then can we focus on educating the market, educating SMEs? But the education piece still for me is massively important. And the whole ecosystem has to be working collaboratively. Mm. So you've got, you know, whether it's the BBA, whether it's the ICC, whether it's the Institute of Exports, whether it's BEXA, the banks, government, all got to be pointing and aligned in the same way with the same message and get rid of the rhetoric and the politics and focus on the customer. And then we might have a chance of making these things
happen. And if you were a betting man, Mark, how likely is
that? I'd say it's 50-50 at the
50-50.
Moment. 50-50.
Well, you know, we recently had...
Which is not bad in today's market.
Yeah, although taking that 50-50, I think, is a 50-50 for the UK.
Yeah.
I think if you look at other export credit agencies, there's some, and I'm thinking of the Nordics here, their speed of response that they provide for SMEs is unbelievably quick.
Yeah,
I think the problem is export credit agencies have got, historically, their business is all lumpy project, long gestation periods. And so therefore, you know, for an exporter waiting 3 or 4 months for an LOI or knowledge whether the agency is going to provide support, it's fine because it kind of would marry along their gestation period for that project. If you're an SME, you need to know in 2 weeks' time whether you've got the support. You know, going back to Simon's point about having wholesale, full turnover cover. If agencies are able to provide a turnaround in a week, 5 days or whatever, much shorter than 2 or 3 months, then I think that's going to give the confidence, take away the fear that SMEs have got. And I think will drive more exports. Because let's not forget, you know, we started off at the beginning of this conversation about the sheer size of the SME market as a portion of the economy. So you only need to move the dial a little bit with SMEs. The impact in terms of growth to the GDP and in jobs is massive. So I think there will be a political agenda driven to the UK in particular to do more for the SMEs, because of Brexit and because of the impact it will have on the
economy. But that's not export credit agency support, I'm sorry. They can do more and they will do more, but it's nothing to do with export credits. Nothing to do with export credits. It's to do with availability of LCs, bank lines, support for LCs through the private risk insurance market.
I think LCs is a red herring. I mean, they've been dying for a long time and they're not coming back.
Yeah.
So, you know, the system has to find a way of supporting using open account. Now, You know, we haven't mentioned the blockchain word yet, but whether blockchain ultimately in 5 years' time is part of this solution, I don't know. But letters of credit are not. You know, they're just not. I actually think it's the invoice finance sort of factoring market that actually is for SMEs is one part that we haven't discussed, yeah. Much more appropriate for a lot of SMEs. But the reality is your organisation is slightly different.
Rebecca, so are you going to say? Or?
I wanted to focus on that.
I just make one point on that, Dan, because I think it is important, because the core invoice finance companies in the UK, as typically being subsidiaries of banks, really don't like international receivables. Yeah, they'll do domestic and they'll do a little bit of international. What we need that environment to do is do much more of it with the support of insurance policy.
I think I want to focus on that risk point a little bit more, because it's risk on both sides. It's a perception of risk on both sides. So if you look at the UK market, UK SMEs constitute about 23% of UK exports. So, I mean, if we're looking at total export values, we're looking at something in the region of £800 billion. That's an awful lot of money that the SMEs are counting for, more than 200 or around 200 billion, something 25%, slight over exaggeration. But if we're looking at that size of market, and we're also saying that certain types of export finance are not necessarily appropriate, something's going on. There is finance being made available to these companies. So it's actually understanding the need of the SME and the SME being able to articulate their need as well. So there's kind of a perception of risk and a perception of failure on both sides that's actually causing the problem. And we're talking as well mostly about in inverted commas, developed world SMEs, but have a look at the distinction and definitional problems when we start to look at African and Asian markets, because actually the proportion of SMEs that account for exports in those markets is much, much, much higher. And the problem is that if those companies aren't getting finance and they really need educating on what international trade finance is, then it's very likely that trade in those countries will actually decline. And you've seen that in Africa. And a lot of that is because of the perception of risk in those African markets, which is actually holding back even the conversation, because there's a perception of risk, and that's a regulatory one as well. So I think we need to distinguish between sort of SMEs in Europe and SMEs in North America and SMEs in Africa and Asia, where they're actually systemically for growth, for economic growth, more important.
But that's an issue of, in my eyes, I think you can summarise that by saying it's an issue of communication and knowledge.
Mm.
I think a lot of SMEs, because the banking market is becoming much more fragmented, I think it's very difficult for an SME to identify in a manner and be able to communicate in a manner to a bank how that project and how their trade is structured and how the risks are mitigated. And for that SME to know which bank to go to. Historically, an SME would just need to, you know, I'm going back 15, 16 odd years ago, historically an SME could bank with one of the big clearers, picking up Simon Jones's point earlier. And it didn't matter whether that SME had a project in Kazakhstan or Brazil or wherever. It could go to its domestic bank and that bank would be able to do whatever it does. Now, because of many aspects of regulatory change and issues where the banks have changed their business model, if an SME goes to its domestic bank, its house bank, with a project in Kazakhstan, as an example, it's going to get turned down. Unless that bank, by pure coincidence, has a branch or a network, all right, in Kazakhstan. So
it's actually worse than that, Gabby. It might actually put the current business with that bank at risk, because they're going to a market that's considered as high risk for that bank.
So the Bank of England has just come out with a piece of research on the Bank Underground blogs, but there's a bigger programme of research behind it that actually says in emerging markets, if the bank of the country that the SME is exporting to is actually based in that country, then it actually helps the local SME understand the market that it's going to. So the idea of having, local knowledge of actually international banks having local knowledge and being able to understand is different markets around the world for the SME sector is a very important one, because it means that...
But that's an old banking model.
But it's an old banking... Yeah? Exactly. It doesn't apply anymore at all. And that's where the issues for SMEs are going to come from, because the banking market has shifted so much over the last even 3 years. It's creating problems for those markets where there are higher risks.
I think that's a really important point, and there's a real tension here, and actually there's an irony as well, which is governments are trying to promote SMEs into trade. The regulators are closing down accounts.
Yeah.
Closing off the sort of what we describe as the tail end of your client base, i.e. those very small companies on which it's either very, very hard to do proper KYC and client onboarding, or if it's possible at all, it's very expensive. And so just a point on that, and we can use this as a little bit of a proxy. There's a study from the Correspondent Banking Institute on how much it costs to maintain an account for a correspondent bank. And that's gone up from what it was 5 years ago, which is about 15,000 euros per annum, to 75,000 euros per annum to maintain a correspondent banking account. Now, if you just use that as a proxy for an account with a buyer in Africa somewhere, in terms of the cost of maintaining an account for a bank in today's environment, all the regulatory issues, the regular periodic reviews, the annual reviews, the KYC, the client onboarding, visiting, the travel costs, that's an incredibly expensive account to maintain. And if you imagine how much you need to earn on a single export finance contract to justify holding that open, and let's say a short export finance contract, 5 years, five times 75, these are big figures for relatively small contracts. This is why we, in our export finance business, have a minimum contract size around 25 million euro. Because in order to justify the expense of going through the financing process, that's the kind of sweet spot at which it becomes worthwhile. 25 million euro is half the turnover of the largest SME, by the usual definition of an SME having a turnover of not greater than 50 million euro. And I wouldn't advise any SME to have a single client or a single contract which is 50% of their turnover. So by definition, it becomes a very inappropriate tool. And hence my earlier comment. I think it's a sledgehammer to crack a nut.
Yeah. Well, I suppose if you look at the international banks that have correspondent networks now, you could argue IFC, EBRD, Asian Development Bank, Inter-American Development Bank, and now you look at EIB doing the same thing to cater for Greece and Turkey with the same problems.
Well, to some extent, you're talking about, instead of the ECA market, you're talking about multilateral banks actually taking on some of the mantle of that responsibility, because they are in the markets where the risks associated with SME and SME financing are actually higher. So, and they are the ones that at the moment are flagging these as particular issues. Everybody wants to, and the whole issue of SME finance has to a very large extent been politicised, and it's been politicised on one level or another for decades. I mean, this is nothing new. But the issue of growth in emerging markets is fundamentally tied up with SMEs in a far greater way than it is in let's just call it the developed world, for want of a better phrase. And so those are the banks that need to start, or the multilateral organisations that need to start thinking about this more seriously.
So are we saying that, amongst these, and not just SME deals, but say smaller deals, 10 million and below, potentially, that actually it's going to be development banks and ECAs and government support, and actually the international banks are, for a number of reasons, regulatory liquidity requirements, just not going to be able to play in this space?
I think the answer to that is there's going to be many international banks not going to play into that space, but it does leave a gap. And I think there are banks who are starting to fill that gap. Because if you are able to service that segment and provide support for an SME that becomes transformational for the SME, the bank that does that for that SME has an unbelievably strong relationship with that SME,
absolutely right,
for everything and for for ages, right? Yeah. And it shifts the relationship from being just a funds provider to a bank that becomes an integral part of supporting that business. And that changes the game plan completely, I think. Yeah. And I think where the bank
starts... It's almost like a VC relationship.
No, it's a strategic relationship.
It's a strategic, it's transformational. You're seen as part of that growth for that company. And as a result of that, I think banks who play in that space get a much stronger, much better return on Scott, you put me out, you know.
Which touching,
I'm touching
leg.
My leg, you know. I think they get a much stronger return of their energy, whether it's human capital or economic capital. And I think on a long-term basis, they have a much more profitable.
Gabby, you know what? I completely agree with that, and I don't think anyone would disagree. But the fact is, you do have to kiss an awful lot of frogs to find those princes. And that is what is not tenable. They are the exception.
Not tenable for international banks specifically, or not tenable?
I don't think it's tenable for business. I think ECAs are largely publicly owned, and by definition, they're political animals, want to support the SMEs. Some publicly owned banks, whether they were always publicly owned or became publicly owned during the financial crisis, will also have an agenda to support SMEs. But most privately owned banks can't make this work, except in their home markets where they have very, very large branch networks and they can get economies of scale out of framework facilities, repeat business, the flow that
I think
a number of clients
I think
can
it
provide.
Is scale, Simon.
Yeah.
So my organisation, you know, we're absolutely focused on the SME Mittelstand market. That's, you know, we've got a global business. That's important to us. But the core of the bank is all about this SME and Mittelstand. So,
what kind of sizing, just to give us an idea?
Well, I'm talking sort of, you know, from, you know, half a million up to 100 million turnover. Yeah, that's the core of what our organisation is focused on a global basis in our 14 core markets. The trick then is, how do you create an ecosystem where you can access other markets for those core customers? And that's the bit that we're very focused on. But you have to line everything up, and you have to have everybody focused on the same mission. And as to Gabby's point, it's not about how much money you make out of export finance. It's actually, what's the whole relationship worth? And does that give you value with the CEO and CFO that says, we understand what you're doing for us. This is transformational. This is really important to us. You're helping grow our business. We will bring you this other business, and we're not going to nickel and dime you on a basis points on a, you know, an overdraft or a term loan, because we see that value created. Now,
so you're saying the frog prince ratio is doable?
Well, I think the frog analysis is absolutely right. What you have to have is your own ecosystem that helps you spot all the princes or princesses. Yeah, that's what you have to have, so that you're going to have a lot of people out there knowing what you can do as an organisation, knowing that you can help deliver these transactions, but helping you, if you like, on the marketing side, yeah, because they know who to. So you've got people acting as filter. But that's what I go back to when I talk about the ecosystem. We have to line up. Everybody has to be lined up and pointing in the same direction, because that's what's, I mean, I'm talking about UK. That's what UK PLC needs, and particularly in the environment we're in now.
We are talking about a very UK-centric issue here, which has been caused, I think it is, Gabby, it's been caused, I mean, I think Simon or Rebecca articulated earlier about the, you know, the regulators are saying one thing about banks doing things overseas they shouldn't be doing, they should be supporting their domestic enterprises. And of course, if you're supporting your domestic enterprises only domestically, then you're not helping them grow at all. That is troubling in the UK. But in our other countries, it's not like that at all. You look at Germany, where the banking system is completely different. You've got hundreds and hundreds of banks, and each of those banks, even though they are small and don't have international presences, are supporting their client base in Kazakhstan and Brazil. They are doing that. I know the UK banks are
allowed
to, but they
are. There are under pressure from the government.
And Italian banks are doing that. Look what the Italian banks did on the Rosner deal.
I think we're talking the same thing, because I think if you look at the banking model, and maybe Simon Savile would be interested to get his perspective. My viewpoint is that the relationship between a Mittelstand exporter in Germany and their bank is strategic. You know, those companies don't go to 10 banks. Okay.
That's what I'm saying.
So I think, you know, going back to what I was saying, I think where that relationship is all-encompassing, then the banks will provide that support.
See, you've got something very different in Germany, and obviously Simon Slayer is going to be able to say a lot more about this, but you've actually, than I can, but you've got a different structure of banking. So to your point, Simon Jones, it's actually a funding ladder. So it's a strategic relationship that goes right the way through the German banking system, from the Sparkassen to the regional banks, and then right the way through to the Deutsche Banks and the Commerzbanks of this world. And they have a relationship that passes the company, the SME, through that system right the way through. So the local...
And if that fails, KfW can do it all.
Well, exactly. As long as it can push the right buttons when it's transferring money, I think. But I think you have to look at the whole German system actually as a function of its history and the way in which it's developed and everything, and it's very specific to Germany.
So yes, but we shouldn't confuse SMEs with Mittelstand corporates in Germany. We have Mittelstand corporate clients with a turnover of €1 billion.
Yeah.
They are large companies.
Well, the biggest and one Mittel, is...
By definition, I think SMEs, we're talking about up to 50 million turnover. That's a commonly accepted definition of an SME. Very, very different market.
So the biggest one is Robert Bosch. It's a
family-owned business. With a turnover of multi-billions.
Yeah, exactly.
But the question really, though, Simon, is the relationship between Mittelstand or an SME in Germany and its bank much more strategic than it is here in the UK?
I'm not sure I can comment on that. My instinct is to say no. I think yes, it's strategic. Yes, there are a lot of them. It's a very important sector for Deutsche Bank. We bank it, but with products that are appropriate to that particular sector. And coming back to the heart of our discussion, is export finance one of those products? No, I don't think it is. Not for the SMEs. It absolutely is for the Mittelstand companies, because they're large. They have bigger turnover, the contract, individual contract sizes are big too.
And if it is appropriate for them, then there are entities in Germany that can do that. AKA, is owned by 30 banks, and they're supposed to funnel the small SME type business that you can't do, as Deutsche Bank or Commerz can't do, into there. There's an infrastructure there. What we lack in the UK is any type of infrastructure, and it's moving, and regulation is causing the UK banks to stifle the business.
Well, I think, I think UKEF is part of a solution. There are lots of different parts of the solution, and it's about alignment. The one bit that government is not tackling is this regulatory piece. They're ignoring it. They're absolutely ignoring it. It gets raised. All of us will raise it on different panels in different forums. I mean, the biggest arena that we've raised it on as a consistent industry recently is on Iran, for quite a while, because they've obviously been trying to strong-arm the banks to... support, and we can't, because the regulatory environment does not allow us to.
That's a good example.
So that's a government problem. They've got to talk to each other across the left hand and right hand of that organisation and help us to help them. And that's, for me, that's where, government is lacking at the moment. And it's really not talking to itself.
The classic one, Mark, was the Barclays event of last year, when the government, the Treasury, wrote to Jess Staley to criticise them for not supporting an exporter in Iran.
Yeah.
And why weren't they supporting an exporter in Iran? Because they weren't allowed to.
Yeah, exactly. Shocking. Yeah.
And the government sent a letter about
it. A shocking letter.
OK, so UKEF may not be the answer, but it, as Mark said, it could be part of the answer. There was a direct lending program that was meant to be targeted towards smaller deals, smaller companies, and has ended up being used for sort of larger deals. And that's not a UK issue. I mean, you look at direct lending programs across the world. But presumably the aim is still the same. So there will be some tweaking to try and make that program more accessible to smaller companies for smaller deals. If you had advice to sort of ECAs looking to do sort of direct lending programs to make them more accessible to sort of a wider array of exporters and for smaller deals, what would that advice be?
I've got one. I think the problem with the UK in terms of the direct lending is that they are religious in making sure that the direct lending program is only applicable for trades which are longer than 2 years in terms of repayment periods. So, you know, that's the nub of the problem. Most SMEs, they need deferred payment terms, but, you know, the size of their contract, their end customer, they don't need 5 year, 8 year repayment periods. They need repayment periods, typically 1 or 2 years. And UK Export Finance says, we can't give you direct lending if it's for a repayment period, which is 2 years or less. Yeah. And so therefore, they've come up with a scheme, but it doesn't fit what most SMEs and their customers need. I think it's a great scheme, but they just need to move away from this 2 year requirement. I think if they did do that, then I would see that be a much greater interest by SMEs for that programme.
But if that is the hot spot, if that's the sweet spot of where the action is for SMEs, then that's really private sector, Gabby. And look, you just said it. They need deferred payment terms. They don't really need finance. ECA, they just need to offer a little bit of credit. You know, 90 days, 180 days. These aren't big infrastructure, long life items that require amortization over multi-year repayment profiles.
Which is why some form
deferred
of
payment.
Sorry, which is why some form of invoice finance or factoring is actually a better way of going about this.
Exactly.
With credit risk insurance.
Exactly.
Yep.
Is there a market failure?
No. Okay. Let's pick up this point before we move away. What do you think the pricing differential is between doing it through UK Export Finance and doing an invoice factoring fintech type financing for 2 years?
You know what? Doesn't really matter.
Whoa! God,
I really don't think it really matters.
For an SME, either you have something that costs you through an export credit, say, all in, including the premium and everything else, 3%, okay, 4%. And I've seen prices now at 12, 15% for the same sort of risk. You know, that's the difference between, for an SME, that's the difference between making money or losing money or not winning the trade in the first instance.
I think you've chosen a very extreme example.
I'm telling you, I'm seeing a lot of this.
I think the magic happens in offering the deferred payment terms.
Not at 12, 15%.
And taking care of the risk. Not at 12 and 15%, but if the pricing is close, then it works.
If the pricing is close, Simon, I agree, it would work. But the trouble is, the pricing is not close. The pricing I was going to say obscene, but it's not. But it's because the pricing is the pricing. That's the market pricing. But the market pricing for invoice and receivable discounting cross-border, even with an insurance wrap, is huge.
But then you're treading on very dangerous territory by raising subsidy issues. You're then implying that if that's the market price, ECAs are providing subsidy, and they cannot be deemed to be providing subsidy.
No, they can provide a support where there's a market failure.
Market gap, yeah.
What I'm saying is at 12, 15%, that does not...
That's a market failure.
That's a market failure because that does not make a trade happen. That's the problem.
Yeah.
So you say basically it's not a pricing of risk, it's a pricing of time.
Coming back to the global thing, I mean, we're also very focused on what's happening or not in the UK here, but globally... Trade is being financed effectively. Sinosure, okay, does 200 billion of short-term coverage every year. 200 billion. Now, it is the world's first or second biggest exporter, whatever, so it has to.
Short-term.
But they do it
for
the SMEs.
Yeah.
So other people are doing this.
Yeah.
It's not a global phenomenon. It's a UK issue, partly driven by a number of factors, including the crisis and regulation and banks being pulled back to the UK, etc. But the French banks were pulled back to France after the crisis and the euro crisis. But I think they're doing a lot more than British banks are allowed to do.
Dan, to come back to your question, you know, what can the ECAs do? I think in the case of UKEF, they've gone the extra mile to help SMEs as much as they can. They've made the whole... reason for being of UKEF to be about facilitating exports rather than just providing export finance. And that was a great move. It means they can do things like working capital, which is what SMEs really need, not export finance. They can provide that on a discretionary basis through some of the UK clearing banks, all super measures. The direct lending facility per se is a great product. If it gets used by one or two SMEs, fantastic. But equally, it should be there for all, including the larger middle-sized exporters, the large exporters as well, who will pick up SMEs in their supply chains. And look, I think they've already done all they should be. We shouldn't be building program specifics around SMEs. It should be there for the large event-driven contracts that small and medium-sized companies can supply into.
So would you be supportive of UK Export Finance allowing direct lending for repayment periods below 2 years?
Yes, I think I would.
There you are. Then.
Isn't there an OECD problem on that? The reason they don't do it is the OECD.
Yeah.
They can't do it. It's a regulatory thing.
No. OECD, it's a gentleman's agreement. It's not a rule book. Paragraph 2 in the OECD is.
I know it is, right? Gabby. It is, Gabby.
So, you know,
it's the export financier's Bible.
It's a gentleman's agreement.
And nobody would go against the Bible.
Yes.
Just to follow up on that. So, some ECAs that maybe have gone slightly further, for example, EDC. Does that arguably go too far, do you think?
EDC is not an agent. It's not an export credit agency. It's many things. One of its functions is an export credit agency, but it's also other things, whereas UK Export Finance is an export credit agency.
Look, I think they have gone too far. And the reason I say that is not because I think they're necessarily doing the wrong thing, but I think it has stifled Canadian banks who could otherwise be there for their Canadian exporters. And I think I'd say the same thing about US Exim when it had a large direct lending program. It effectively took out the US banks from the US export finance market because the product it provided was so good, it couldn't be matched by the US banks. It became commoditized. And and US exporters are left with a very, very small population of banks that are prepared to provide cross-border trade support for exports. And that's true in Canada as well. You have EDC, who are the dominant player, with very little competition because of what they've done. So I laud them for what they're doing, but I'm not sure it's the right model because it stifles that competition and you end up with a very constrained market as a consequence. Europe, there are lots of European banks. The export finance business is largely about European banks and Asian banks. And yes, there are some American and Canadian banks, but it's a European thing because the European models have found a way to allow banks to continue to play in the market, giving choice and options to the exporters.
I think what's really interesting about all of this discussion is it's redolent of the debate that we were having in the 2000s, all the way through the noughties, talking about SME access to finance. And it was, where do you have the government involved? Where do you get the private sector involved? What are we trying to do to grow small businesses? And how is this going to work? It's almost exactly the same set of issues, only on a more global level. And I think where the public and the private sector are really scratching their heads almost is, what is that balance between the political need to sort out this issue and make sure that these champions of industry and these heroes are funded properly in international markets, and where does the private sector kick in? And I have to go back to, actually, the US and Germany both have very similar models of actually almost leading through a funding ladder right from the beginning, where you've got a match of public and private sector support in different formats. And it's not just export finance, it's other areas as well. So it's access to venture capital, it's access to business advice, it's access to legal support right at the very base of the pyramid, if you like. And then it goes right the way through to full commercial, private sector, financial facilities. And I think what we lack in the UK, to Mark's point, Gabby's point, all of our points really, is that sort of structural access to finance. And if I was saying one word to UKEF, it's understand that structure. That's more than one word. But, you know, that's the key thing, because at the very base of the pyramid, finding the prince or the princess is going to be about making sure that they understand where they've got to get advice from and how they're going to grow. And it's that balance that we haven't struck.
Reform Group did a very interesting slide which mapped all of the different government agencies who, on an individual basis, would all see themselves as supporting an exporter to do international trade. It was like a plate of spaghetti,
yeah.
Right? And so the question that Reform Group said, well, if you're an exporter and you're looking at a trade, who do you go to?
Well, that's right? What
and actually, I was going to say, it's not just UK Export Finance. I mean, there's a whole group of different agencies that are out there to support. And it's a very fragmented market, which is Which I think is why we are, particularly from a UK perspective, struggling with this at this moment in time, which is why it's interesting to look at what the French have done with BPI France and bringing that all together into one agency. And I think there is a war going on for trade. And I think whether it's a market failure or market fragmentation, at the end of the day, governments see that they have to find a way of developing their economy, creating wealth, creating jobs, getting a GDP increase, which is positive over and above inflation. And I think if that is at the detriment of banks, because they have a political agenda to do that, they will do that. And I see that there will be more involvement by governments to find a solution and drag the SMEs forward as a way of creating and stimulating that growth in the economy.
I remember a couple of years ago, I ran a survey across a number of countries, 13 countries, a survey of small businesses and how they were internationalising. And one of the questions we asked in that survey was, who do you go to for business advice? Do you go to your bank? Do you go to your accountant? Do you go to your lawyer? Do you go to government-sponsored business support? Or do you go to yourself? Or do you go to other entrepreneurs, etc.? So about 30% go to their bank for advice. About 70 or 80% go to their accountant for advice. And nearly 20% go to themselves for advice. They just don't bother asking. They just take the advice from themselves because they know the stuff. And actually, if you look at the ratio of men to women, no women ask themselves. They don't have the confidence. They always go out and ask somebody else. But actually, the figure is heavily biased. It's pretty much 20% of men actually take the advice from themselves, don't bother asking anyone else.
Mm-hmm. So, well, I think you've all given very good advice today, and thank you very much for that. Just a couple of things. Gabby, you mentioned sort of that there's all these agencies and it's not always clear sort of who does what and what they are. Maybe we should change it from export finance to secret agency finance as a kind of a phrase. A little sort of shameless plug that you mentioned trade wars. Rebecca Harding will have a book that will be given out at the TXF conference in Venice to all delegates on that very subject of trade wars and the weaponization of trade. In the meantime, a massive thank you to Rebecca Harding, to Simon Jones, to Gabby Buck, to Mark Ling, and to Simon Sayer. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life.